Rishus, the Reish Kailel, and everyone who came this morning. Before I begin, I just wanted to thank Yisrael Meir, Rabbi Goldman, for choosing the title of this year. It drew a tremendous crowd. And the truth is, someone actually asked me this morning, he told me that the title we should have said was Business Ethics and Other Oxymorons. But it was too late to change the sign. I want to thank also the fellow for inviting me to join in this tremendous Kiddush Hashem, people taking their day off and using it to come together to learn, especially about business ethics and social responsibilities. No one likes to be told what to do. No one likes to have responsibilities. And the fact that people came out is a tremendous testament to and a tremendous Kiddush Hashem. I didn't grow up in Canada. Where I grew up in Detroit. Victoria Day obviously didn't exist. I am Canadian. My mother grew up in Montreal. There as well, there seems to be a disagreement whether Victoria Day exists or it's another French name. It's another something in French, which I don't understand, which means Patriots Day. So I decided that since this is a Victoria Day breakfast, it would only be appropriate to learn something about Queen Victoria. It's in her zchus that we have this breakfast here, this day off from work. So I tried to read about her, what was unique about her, what made her special. So I read she started Shidduchim at 17, she got married at 20, and she had 9 children. To me, this sounded like the typical girl in Williamsburg. So I tried a different tactic. I tried, maybe we'll learn about the Victorian era. So I found it was described as a time of hard work, honesty, and a sense of responsibility to those who are less well off. So that's something that we could talk about. So we had a topic, we had a title, all we needed was a shir. So one of the services that we offer at Halacha Institute is halachic mediation. Two people have a disagreement. They have a situation. One sees the situation one way. The other person sees the situation the other way. They want to resolve this disagreement without going to a Beis Din. So they have an option. They have an opportunity to go work through the disagreement with a Rav who's trained in mediation, who understands the mentality of where they're coming from, and also who is knowledgeable in halacha, the workings of a Beis Din, and b'chlal, how halacha works. So I sat in a number of mediations, and the truth is I was very impressed with the whole process. People come in, they're not willing to budge, they leave happy. At the end, there was one situation, one halachic mediation which stood out, which I was most impressed with. Obviously, I can't tell you the details, but I'm going to change them slightly, but you'll get a sense of what was happening. So a certain property manager had hired someone to install windows throughout the building. He has different buildings, so he hired someone to install windows for his building. So they made the windows in the factory, they went down, the installer went down to the building, and they started going floor by floor. They went to the top floor, I think, then they went to the next floor. And then the owner of the property manager went and took a look at their work, and he was very unimpressed. He found many issues with the windows. Windows are upside down. It wasn't so good. So he basically told them that, listen, it's not going to work, and he sent the installers off, and now they had a disagreement. On the one hand, the property manager gave a down payment. This is to the tune of $150,000 down payment. And the other person said, you never gave us a chance. The way you make windows is you put them upside down, then you fix them. That's how you put in windows. And that was the disagreement. So this was a disagreement of a few $100,000. And they came in finally after a while. They ended up at $3,200 dufferin for mediation. The property manager wanted his deposit back. He felt he didn't get any work done. And the window maker felt he wasn't given opportunity, so he wants to finish the job, and he wants to get paid. This is more or less the thing. They came in the morning. They took a mincha break. They davened with tremendous kavana. And finally, they were getting towards the end. One of the people there was Chassidish, just to give a sense of, just so you would understand the story better. So he was certain that he went to a base and he for sure would win the case. It was obvious to him, he knew 100%. But yet he decided, despite that, he said, Leman Ashulam, for the sake of peace, that he's willing to give up another $25,000 It's just to be able to resolve the dispute without having to go to a Beis Din in order that there be peace, Laman Ashulim, the way he described it, so they could resolve the dispute amicably. And in his eyes, he was not only not gaining, but he was losing over $50,000. But he felt this was the right thing to do, even though he knew, in his eyes at least, that he would win in a Beis Din. So I think this highlights a little bit how a Jewish person does business. People go out to work, they make money. It's a mitzvah, it's to support a family, to support themselves even. If a person gives ma'aser svarim, say, if a person gives 10% of the money that he makes, everything, every time he goes out to work, it's a mitzvah. He's making money in order to give tzedakah. There's tremendous mitzvah involved in that. So Meir, if you give to the kollel, no? It's the biggest mitzvah, no? So, but that's not what dictates how he does business. There's something that's beyond him. There's something that's above him that transcends him, which really dictates how he goes about doing business. The way this was described by this individual was there's this principle of Laman Ashulim, for the sake of peace, which takes into account what Halacha demands, Lifnim Meshua Sadin. It takes into account other the way he describes business ethics and social responsibilities. And I just thought maybe today we could just discuss, because also when it comes to social situations as well, we have higher principles which guide us. So I thought maybe we could, there's obviously myriads of examples, but just to choose two examples, one maybe more related to social responsibilities, one more maybe related to business responsibilities, business ethics. And then we would discuss each one. So in social responsibility, we'll speak about keeping appointments. In business ethics, we'll speak about how does one market something, how does one sell something, if he doesn't believe in the product, if he does believe in the product. And then we'll try to analyze this together, and hopefully we'll come out with something. So just to before I begin with the... A lot of this has been based on Rabbi Marburger's words. He's a dying in Lakewood. And so a person makes an appointment with a dentist. On the day of the appointment, he gets a call. His friend, a relative, had come in from out of town. And now the friend wants to spend the afternoon with him. He wants to spend the day with him. But there's a conflict. On the one hand, he has a dentist appointment. On the other hand, he wants to spend the afternoon with his friend. But his relative who's coming in and out, there's no way he could do both. So he has a choice. He could either subject himself to the humming of the dental drill, or he could spend the afternoon hanging out with a friend. So what's the obvious? What do you do in that choice? Obviously, the teeth wait, so you'll use a straw for a week. But you don't want to lose out that opportunity to spend time with a friend. So the question comes up. So you make, and really this is a question that affects a lot of areas. You make an appointment to meet with someone. You hire a profession, a gardener, a landscaper. You reserve a spot by the Pesach car cleaning service. I think most people dread Pesach. I know they hear already the word Purim, then already Purim they start shaking. I know there's the cleaning, there's the turning over, the kashering, there's all these different things, the price of matzah, somehow flour goes up every year. I personally wish Pesach was twice a year. Well, I don't know if anyone could identify with this, but as the year goes on, as the year progresses, so my garage gets fuller and fuller. So we have boxes, UOs, unidentified objects, appliances, whatnot, it gets fuller and fuller. And then the dumpsters arrive, and then I have a new parking spot. I wait the entire year. I look forward the entire year to seeing Alan Sheffman's picture hanging up in the bias. That's what I look forward to. This year we had the Shaila. My wife reserved a spot by the car cleaning place. She wanted to get her van cleaned. So I thought, I don't know if I'm right or not, but I thought it would be easier to clean a van than a car. So I decided, why? Because I think cars, the chairs are tighter, the space in between the chairs, the seats are tighter, the van you could take out the car seats, that's what I thought. So I figured, why don't I use that appointment given the car, I'll clean the van. There was no time to do both. The guy, we already reserved the spot too late. And it will be cheaper and it'll be easier. That was the cheshbon. My wife said, 1 second, you reserved the spot to clean the van, it's more expensive. Who said you have a right to switch cars? He's expecting to clean a van and you want to give him a car. Who said that's the right thing to do? In short, is canceling an appointment permitted at last minute? Is a person responsible to compensate the other person for a loss that he caused by him canceling an appointment. Let's say going back to the case of the dentist. So the 2 hours before the appointment, when he gets a call from his friend, is he allowed to cancel the appointment? Is it just not the right thing to do? Is it a mitzvah to do? If it is the wrong thing to do, is he responsible to pay for any loss that it entails? That's a shame. So most situations, if a person makes a verbal commitment to someone, he's not bound by that commitment in halacha, that in the sense that the other party cannot force him to carry through to honor that verbal commitment. However, backing out of a verbal commitment is not permitted from the person backing out in many situations, but the other party has no recourse. I just explain a little more. A person who backs out, there's a siman in Chayshim Mishpat, siman Reish Dalet, that says a person who makes a verbal commitment to someone, in many situations, if it's not, let's say he makes a verbal commitment to give a small gift, that's something that the other person assumes that he'll carry through, so then, at that point, he would be considered mechusri amana to back out. And the Gemara says, the chacham don't view him highly. The Marsham says maybe it's an isser. But if a person makes an appointment, it's understood that the office will call him up, confirm the appointment, and at that point he's given a choice, back out or not back out. But once he confirms the appointment, now it's the day of, so at that point it's not the right thing. It's probably not encouraged. It would seem that he should not back out at that point. However, if he does, at first glance it seems it's a verbal commitment. A verbal commitment, the other party has no recourse, can't force him to follow through with the appointment, and therefore he should not back out. But if he does back out, there's not much to do. So in short, could a person back out? He could back out without being penalized, it would seem. However, there's two exceptions to this halakha. Let's say a person hired someone, and then the worker already started working. So let's say he hired a painter. So the painter painted, he hired a painter to paint the entire house. So the painter painted one room, he's moving on to the second room, and the guy says, you know what, I have to run now, I don't want to be here right now, I want to hang out with a friend. At that point, once he started the work, or even if he went out, he didn't even start painting yet, but he went out, he bought brushes, he bought paint. He went and he prepared whatever he needed to do to prepare. Already at that point, he's considered to have started the work. So he won't be able, he has a recourse to force the other person to let him go through. However, so let's say in the case of a dentist, if let's say a guy hired a dentist to fill in 5 cavities, right? Obviously he wants to hang out with his friend. But if a guy hired a dentist to fill in 5 cavities, and he worked out the first cavity, the second cavity said, I had enough, at that point, he already started the work, so it's much more difficult for him to be able to back up. That's the first exception. Another exception would be if one backs out, of a verbal commitment, and then he'll cause the other person a loss for backing out. So then, since the other person suffered a loss because of backing out, it's possible he'll have to pay. He may not have to pay the full amount, he'll have to pay, he may have to pay something. The other person has some recourse to be able to demand some money from the other person. So for example, if let's say a person made an appointment with a dentist. He canceled the day of. At that point, the dentist, it was already after he confirmed the appointment, and he canceled the day of. So at that point, if the dentist would have been able to fill up the spot, but he didn't because he was reserving the spot for the person, and now that person backed out, so then he caused a loss, there may be some sort of recourse. But let's say it comes out a very interesting halacha. If the dentist is extremely busy, so now if a guy cancels, he calls up the next person in line and that person comes down, he didn't cause a loss, so he has no recourse. If he's so unpopular that he has a lot of spots, then also he didn't cause a loss because that spot would not have been filled up. It's only when by him canceling that he would have had someone fill that spot, and he didn't fill that spot, so then there it's possible that he caused the loss. So in that situation, he may be responsible to pay something. Again, just to add another, which is important, this is all if a person just decides on his own, for no real reason, just to back out. He wants to hang out with his friend. If, let's say, something came up, it was an onus. He had a situation which he couldn't have thought of, which was an emergency. So at that point, that situation is governed by another set of halachas. And that's a whole separate discussion. That's a different siman in Shalei Mishma, and that's a whole different discussion. But for now, but a typical case, or in our case that we're speaking about, where the person had a choice to go or not to go, and he decided, you know what, forget about it, I don't want to go to the dentist today, or whatever the profession is, I don't want to hire that person, I don't want that gardener, or whatever it was. In many situations, again, this is obviously more complicated, and when it comes down to it, a shayla should be asked, but in many situations, there would be responsibility. But this is all in the vantage point of the patient, of the client. If the dentist, on the other hand, demands this, he may find himself very unpopular, so it's just the person should... This is just, again, a discussion that something to think about when a person does... When a person is in a situation where he's thinking, where he made an appointment, and now he's just thinking about canceling the appointment, it's just something to bear in mind. There may be halachic ramifications. Should a person do it? Should a person not do it? And again, this is just... We have a couple minutes here, so just to bring out some issues that come up. So this would be one discussion that comes up.
Yeah. Quick question. So, I mean, if the dentist says our policy is if you cancel within 24 hours, there'll be a $50 fee.
So that, right.
You have to pay the... Does that lay you off? Does that give you more permission to cancel at the last minute? Because you're paying...
You'd have to pay the fee.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, halakhically as well.
From a halakhic standpoint, does that actually free you up from this negativity of canceling at the last minute?
I think he charges you the fee so you won't cancel.
I appreciate that. But what I'm saying is you're saying, okay, fine, I'll pay the fee because I really want to be with my friend.
I don't think that you, after you confirmed it, I don't think you'd be allowed to. I mean, whatever, depending on the situation.
I guess that's my question.
Yeah.
It doesn't change your requirements.
Right. Yeah, I mean, his recourse would be the 50, though. Right.
I don't know, let's look at that. It's from the theory. So, an important point. The guy charges $50 for a missed fee, but he's doing a root canal. Root canal is charging $2,000 for root canal, right? So I claim to hear your answer because is he able to rule out and say, well, the $50 because that's the policy, 24-hour cancel. Or is he obligated to some way of paying early $2,000 root canal? That is left.
That's an
idea.
Right. So at that point, it would seem like at that point he shouldn't back out. But the dentist says they agreed upon this fee. He said, "I'll take this if you back out."
But the $50, first of all, the dentist might have to pay $50 for this appointment. But the fee that you're going to pay, okay, is not going to be against the loss that the dentist is going to incur.
He said, but this is what he said, I'm willing to accept.
No, that's what he's saying. What the dentist is saying is, I'm going to give you a kanas, but really, okay, you messed me over because I could have made...
That means he's saying, I'm not demanding any payment. This is all I'm demanding from you.
But what happened if he didn't call and didn't pay, and then it went to the dentist again?
Correct. What?
He gets back to you. He says, wait, the call said the chance to go to the spot.
Cover off whether or not it makes a difference if the person is paying to insurance. Oh, has run his pocket. How will that?
Oh, have won't pay if he doesn't show up. I understand.
Oh, does not pay.
Right, you have to get a treatment for Oh to pay.
That's right, but he has a loss because he's
right. So again, so that's the shayla.
Yeah. If the guy got very sick, the dentist wouldn't want him in his office.
So that's an onus. So that's, again, that's a different set of halachas. That's a different. That's something else. Before we were given a second car, so I spent the morning, half the day at Halacha Institute, and the morning I would learn in the Kollel, and write Heter Iskas in the afternoon. Derech Agav, just as an aside, I just mentioned Heter Iskas, but a lot of contracts that people sign, they have, let's say, a late fee on the bottom. If a person doesn't pay by, whatever, 15 days after the bill, the invoice is due, then they have to pay an extra 1.5%, whatever, 20% yearly, whatever, annually, whatever, but there's some sort of charge there that it's an interest charge. So that's a real shaila of ribbis, and it's kedai to look into that if a person has on their own contracts or his own agreements, or if he has to sign one of these agreements, what to do, because that's a real shaila about ribbis.
Is that the same as a discount for early payment?
What, that's, what?
Is it the same as a discount?
Depending on what the, it depends on what's the situation. So it could be,
it
could be not.
You have to pay 30 days, but if you pay within 10 days, you get a discount.
That's a big discussion in the Pesukim. That 30 to 10, that's a whole discussion in the Pesukim. It's a discussion. That's the. I was told 10:30.
Mark right into
right
that.
Here.
Yep.
Nice and loud.
So sometimes the system didn't always work, and it was necessary to take a taxi. So Shiloh came up. It came up once that I ordered a taxi. Let's say 1 o'clock, 1:15. And it was 1:15, and the taxi didn't yet come. It was 1:15, quickly became 1:20. There was no sign of yellow, no sign of orange or green in Toronto. There was no sign of any taxi. So my shaila was at that point, am I allowed to take an Uber? Could be I hired the taxi. Now the taxi's driving already. He already started the work. So maybe it's forbidden for me to cancel. He already started working. Or maybe that, no, if the taxi doesn't come on time, then he was the one who breached the contract, or he breached the verbal agreement, then it's for sure permitted for me. He was the one who backed out and not me. So would I be allowed to, at that point, to take an Uber? It would seem it depends what's acceptable for a taxi. It's acceptable for a taxi to come 5-10 minutes late, then he's still within the contract. If not, then he was the one who breached the contract, and that would be permitted. Depends. It would depend on what the situation is with the taxi, how late, and I'll leave that child for you.
Is there a difference if the taxi driver is Jewish or not?
It is no mechus v'yamana by an angel. That's my first. There in that case it would. So that's the first shaila. Again, could someone back out from an agreement, a verbal agreement? So that gets into the shaila of backing out from a verbal agreement, mechus v'yamana, depending on if the person already started working, if there's a loss, and if it's something beyond his control, maybe the halachas they fall under a different rubric of halacha. And this, again, just to be ma'ir the shaila, again, not to pask in the shaila, just to have people what to think about it when it comes up. Moving on to more of a business, Shaila, there was once a car company called Yugo, or Jugo, something like that.
Yugo.
It was Yugoslavian made car. And I think it was called Yugo, not because it's Yugoslavia, but it was marketed by Yugo Carroll. So what was unique about these cars? What was special about these cars? They cost $4,000. But you bought a $4,000 car. Just to give a sense, the car was voted the worst car of the millennium by Cars Talk, and the worst car of all time by Time Magazine. This is what people said about it. The Yugo's first stop after the showroom was a service department. Fill her up and replace the engine. At least it had heated rear windows, so your hands would stay warm while you pushed. You go nowhere. That was what they said. So now someone asks you, he said he just came home from yeshiva, he's excited, he wants to buy a Yugo. So what do? You sit him down and you tell him, it's a waste. What are you doing? Save a few thousand more and you buy yourself a different car. What happens though if you're a Yugo salesman? A person comes in to buy a car and you know it's bad for him. You know this is the last thing that he wants to do. It's the last thing you would advise. So what are you allowed to say? Now, obviously, we're not speaking about misrepresenting. It's a good car. That's Geneva's Das. That's a different discussion. What about presenting the fact everything as is? It has heated back windows. The Torah, would that be permitted or not? So the Torah tells us, lifnei lesita mikshol, that before someone who is blind, don't put a stumbling block, which is someone who's figuratively blind because he doesn't understand what he's getting him into, don't give him bad advice, don't put a stumbling block in front of him. He'll trip. So, for example, if someone owns a penny stock and he pushes the stock to all his friends and the friends start buying it, he pumps up the stock and then he dumps his shares. So that would be a problem with Neiver. He's giving bad advice. How does one go about selling something? A guy has an air conditioner. He knows that the air conditioner down the block is a better air conditioner. He's guy selling, again, in this case, a car, a lawnmower. How does one go about selling anything? How could you convince someone to buy from you when you know that someone else is selling a better product? So there's an important distinction within Lifnei Iver. So Lifnei Iver is only forbidden when you advise someone to do something that's detrimental to him. There's no obligation if you see someone doing something bad. Again, within Lifnei Iver, there's no obligation of Lifnei Iver to advise someone who's doing something bad to change what he's doing. That means if you see someone doing buying a Yugo, you have no obligation because of Lifnei Iver, and we'll get to maybe something else, that you have no obligation to advise him not to do that. The Isser of Lifnei Iver is only to advise someone to do something that's bad for him, to do something that's Asr for him, forbidden for him, or something that's detrimental to him, or to his finances. So now going back, so they ask you about the lawnmowers. You could emphasize its strong points. You could say how it cuts this type of grass, and it has this type of engine, it has this horsepower. You could speak about all its good points, all its strong points, and emphasize that. The same thing with selling a car, an air conditioner. You could speak about how cool it makes a room, how energy efficient it is. You're not advising at that point. You're only providing information. Information you're allowed to provide. The problem will become if at the end of the conversation he says, "So should I buy it?" Now you're in trouble. So what do you? So you can't put, if you think it's bad for him, then you can't push it. So what do you do? So if you really believe the air conditioner is good for him, so let's say you sell Chevys, or you sell, and because you're a Chevy car dealer, you sell Hyundais, you're a Hyundai car dealer, so you really believe Hyundai is the best. Had you worked somewhere else, you may not believe that, but this is really what you believe since you're selling that product. So since that's what you believe, then you're allowed to advise him because that's what you believe. Maybe you believe that because you're biased. So he knows that you're biased, you're a salesman for that company. So he made a choice to ask someone who's biased to provide information to advise you about the product that he's biased for. So that's a decision he made. But that's only as long as you believe that the product is the best product for the person. But going back, if you're this Yugo salesman and you clearly don't believe that that's the best thing for him, so you kind of have to figure out a way to answer the question without giving him advice. Suggesting, I don't know, I'm a Yugo salesman, I own such a car, I was given such a car, whatever, however you work it out, but to advise a person, that becomes more of a challenge. Again, just to be Ma'ir the Shaila, not again, everyone. There's one more quick concept that comes up with this. There's a concept of Ashavas Aveda. If a person sees someone who's destroying his money, or he's losing money, let's say he leaves the sink on, and water is flowing out of the sink, so there's a mitzvah of Ashavas Aveda to close the tap. So if a person sees someone destroying his things, let's say he doesn't know he's destroying it, so it's a mitzvah to tell him that you're destroying the thing. Let's say he's driving his car with winter tires all summer. It's a mitzvah to tell him that it's not a good thing, you're destroying the tires. Would that apply over here? It would seem like that it wouldn't. Meaning if a guy wants to spend his $4,000 that he saved up and to buy this Yugo car, would the mitzvah of Ashavas Aveda apply over here? It would seem not. Because this would be compared to someone who decides on his own. He wants to use all his money, all his earnings, all his savings, and he wants to go on a vacation for 5 weeks. So there's no, what he's doing, he's not throwing out his money. He may be throwing out his money, but he's not getting nothing for his money. He's getting a 5-week trip. And that's what he decided he wants with his money. So for 5 weeks, he enjoys his vacation, and that's it. So the same thing, when he goes out and he buys a car, at the end of the day, he got $4,000 of a car. So he's not losing his money. He's not turning on a sink and letting the water drain out. So therefore, it would seem like there would be no mitzvah of Ashavas Aveda. Maybe there's a mitzvah to give him good advice, and to advise him via hafta. Maybe there's something else. But again, there would be no chiyuv of Ashavas Aveda to advise him not to buy the car. So just the bottom line, when it comes to selling things, it would seem you have to believe in what you're selling. This is what they advise you, I'm assuming, in salesman's store and school. But it's true from halacha as well. It's not just practical advice, it's halachic advice as well. So just, we're out of time, but just to conclude, it's obviously social business ethics is a topic that requires a tremendous amount of a lot more time to investigate it properly. We just touched on two of the myriad examples, Mechusrei Amana, keeping verbal commitments, lifnei iver, giving good advice, not giving bad advice. And, I don't know, practically, I think a person has to have a rabbi and speed dial. I'm not sure what else to say. And just end off with a segula. Just to end off with a segula. I don't like segulas. It would be like, to come here and not give a segula, we'd almost be, I'd be remiss. So just to end off, there's an Aruch HaShulchan in Simen Kuf Nun Vav. This is in the halachas after Shul, after Hilchos Beis HaKnesses. So he goes through the halachas of Masu Matin, the halachas of business. It's a very interesting simen. And he spends a long time. So in Sif Gimel over there, he has a whole arichus about being honest in business and how a Jew does business. And then he says, he brings a point that he says, the Isra v'leish yignoi v'leyigzol is not just, and to make the measures and weights proper, that's he's going on that on those halachas. And he finishes off. He says it's Asr Lignaib, and he says, Uvitur Vishlochan Archaishim Mishpat Simin Shin Memchas. Sameya, happy. Ela Kavani Shi Heng Shalai Tzedek Vilav Shalai Tzedek. The Kavana is, the intention is that your yes should be a yes and your no should be a no. Ukisha Amr says, Schairazu Eilalai Kach Vakach. And if a person says that the merchandise costs this amount, Vishiyahi Taiva Vilay Yishakar, and it's good merchandise, it's a good roof. He has to be honest. He shouldn't say something which isn't true. Af b'chol shu, even a slightly. V'shei maso matonu b'nachas l'mavriyas, he should be pleasant with people. V'dibur b'nachas l'yitzuk, l'yichar, v'l'yichais. V'seif adavra, if a person does this, his yes is a yes, and his no is a no, and he's pleasant to work with. Sof adavra shegam miskara holech b'shem tov, then ultimately what will happen is, his merchandise will get a good name, and his livelihood will be available for him, will be set up for him, and everyone will trust in him, and as someone who trusts Hashem, chesed yisov avenu, will be surrounded by chesed, and when someone's surrounded by the chesed of Hashem, obviously he's extremely successful. So this, if a person's yes is a yes and a no is a no, that's a tremendous, as the Aruch HaShulchan, he guarantees that he'll be successful. So just to conclude, before, when I went to Chicago for the Aguda Business Halacha Institute, the Business Halacha Summit. So over there, there's a Rav from Chicago over there who spoke, his name is Rav Zev Kohn. He has also Choshe Mishpah Kol in Chicago. So he said over, well, the first time he ever spoke about these things in Choshe Mishpah, he was alone in a room eating breakfast. Rav Matisyahu Salman, who was a Mashkiach in Lakewood, was alone eating breakfast, and he walked into the room. He said, you know what, let me sit down with him. So he sat down with Rav Matisyahu. Rav Matisyahu asked him, so what are you doing here? So he explained to him, he's giving a shir, Choshe Mishpah. So he spoke about, and they spoke for a while, and then Rav Matisyahu Salman told him, if you ever speak about something, you have to say over the smog. The smog is a mitzvah, ayin dalet. But the smog over there, a very interesting smog, he speaks of, I forget exactly what the mitzvah was. Could be it's about Hain Tzedek, Lav Tzedek, but he's over there, he describes what will happen when Mashiach will come. So he describes that Mashiach will come, he won't come to the Bayit first, he won't come to the Kol first, maybe that'll be the second stop, but rather where he's going to end up by Bay Street, the business district. That's what we say in Toronto, in New York, they say Wall Street, but he's going to end up in by the business district, and people are going to say, Shalom Aleichem, who are you? They'll say, I'm Mashiach. So he says, what are you doing here? So he says, I came to redeem the Jews. He says, the Jews? Them? Why would you come to redeem them? They have this issue and that issue. Their no is a yes, and the yes is a no, and they have all these different issues. Mashiach will hear that; he'll turn around and he'll leave. However, then he continues. He says, "What would happen?" The same scenario. Mashiach comes. He comes again to Bay Street, to 18th Avenue, and he comes and he and people ask him, "Shalom Aleichem, who are you? I'm Mashiach. What are you doing? I'm here to redeem the Jews." And he says, and they say, "The Jews." Their yes is a yes, their no is a no, their this, their that, all these wonderful things about the Jewish people. When Mashiach hears that, then Mashiach will come, and he'll redeem the Jewish people. Meaning it's the people who are in business who will ultimately decide when Mashiach will come. So whether it's a social setting or a business one, a person always needs to be guided by the halachas and the knowledge that ultimately Hashem is in control, and do things l'man ha'shalom, for the sake of peace, and ultimately be the first one to greet Mashiach. Thank you for listening.